Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Thursday, January 28th, 2016. With me today, I have Dave Hamilton. How are you, Dave?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, Jeff.
It's great to have you here. And Brian Chaffin, how are you?
Splendid.
Splendid is awesome. I am glad you're here, too. And so I have a couple topics that I'd like to hit today, but knowing how we talk, we'll see if we actually get through two topics. How about
we had two topics yesterday or 2 days ago, didn't we? And we did not get to them.
No, we didn't. But hey, it was a really interesting discussion and I just couldn't bring myself to switch topics. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how it goes today. All right. So the first topic, the one I know we're going to hit is the news about Oracle and Java. So for those of you that aren't up on the news yet, Oracle announced that it is deprecating the Java web browser plugin, which means that it's not going to be too much longer before any sites that you would hit on the internet that require you to have Java installed, which is not the same as JavaScript, it's not going to work anymore. But part of that is out of Oracle's hands, because what the various companies that are making web browsers are doing is pulling out support for the plugin architecture that they had been using forever. And I forgot the acronym, but it's the plugin architecture that was created originally for Netscape 2.0, like back in the mid 90s. And with that gone, that means the plugins that rely on that won't work. So that includes Java, Flash, Silverlight, and those are the big ones that come to mind. And I'm just curious what you guys think about this.
So did I hear you correctly that Silverlight's going away too?
I think that sums it up right there. I think the big thing is a lot of people right now are surprised that there's still a Java plugin for browsers.
Yeah, I end up having to install Java itself on my Mac to support. I think Dreamweaver needs it, the least version of Dreamweaver that I have.
Yeah, and CrashPlan uses it.
CrashPlan.
Mm-hmm. But I can't remember the last time I needed the Java plugin for a browser. And I mean, and you know, there's a lot of stuff I got to go to that, you know, I don't necessarily want to go to. Right, just as a course of doing our job, you know.
Where this is going to be a problem is for like intranet type stuff that's written in Java, right? Because Java, I mean, you jest when you say Java, but tons of people still actively develop in Java, right? So, I mean, there's
lots of enterprise stuff too.
Yeah, but even beyond that, there's just a ton of development that happens. So it stands to reason that yes, especially when you combine it with the enterprise, that you would have, you know, these intranet type of things using Java in the browser, because the browser is an easy platform to run it in, right? You don't need to install and set up a separate environment or anything. You just go to this thing, make sure you have the Java plugin installed, and you're good to go. So I probably see it a couple times a year where I need the Java plugin in my browser, but you have to be very cautious and aware of what you let run, because it can, you know, break outside of the browser in terms of security and that sort of thing. So it's not terrible that it goes away, but it's kind of terrible that it goes away.
There are people for whom it is terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, sure. I mean, it forces people that are using Java, that are developing in Java, to then have to go and wrap those things in their own application bundles and yada, 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 which is totally possible and you know, arguably a better way to do it, but certainly not a simpler way to do it.
Yes. Well, and there's bigger implications here, because it's not just Java that's ultimately going away.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to ask. You said Silverlight's going away?
Yes, because NPAPI, that's it. That's the acronym.
Okay.
NPAPI-based plugins won't work in modern web browsers. There's a couple that have already set or have already blocked NPAPI plugins from running, and the rest of all the mainstream browsers are in the process of doing so right now. So that means over the next like 2 years, as web browser updates come out, these plugins that people are using today, they will just simply not be available anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not a good thing.
Microsoft can do something different with Silverlight.
Yes. Flash, however, you know, Adobe has already admitted defeat on the web browser Flash thing.
Sure.
So they're not going to do anything, I think. And so what that means is that anyone that that is relying on Flash as their delivery platform for their site visitors, they need to be working on fixes and changes right now. And same thing for companies that are using Java for the general public. I suppose if you're in the enterprise market, you could tell your employees that they have to freeze their web browser at a certain point so mm-hmm. that they still have Java available, and then they just run old browsers for their internal stuff.
Yeah, and that creates a obviously a security issue, but not a terrible one if you limit that browser to only browsing your internal stuff. But it also creates an opportunity for a customized web browser to be built, right? I mean, there's lots of open source browsers. WebKit is one of them. You could easily say, all right, let's take WebKit where it is today. Let's build it so that you can't add bookmarks and can't do all this other stuff and really just, you know, kind of create a web view, if you would, that uses WebKit as it exists today with that plugin to do whatever it is you need to do internally.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can right? do that. It's a creative solution to the problem.
Yeah. Because if you're going to go to that extent, then you're probably also weighing the value of that versus just rebuilding whatever your system is.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's it. Is right. I mean, you know, you have to put a wrapper around whatever it is your system is. Is this the easiest one to do, or does it make sense to do something else?
Right.
I see that the Oracle statement also encourage people to consider the plugin-free Java Web Start technology. I don't think I've heard of that before, by which I mean I haven't heard of that.
Neither have I.
Dave?
No, I don't know anything about Java Web Start. But it
Java Web Start.
Yeah, first I've heard of it. And that maybe that's, you know, so here we are. That's a good thing. Java Web Start is a framework developed by Sun that allows users to start application software for the Java platform directly from the internet using a web browser. Okay. So all the right. question so is, does it run locally?
Well, it's plug-in free.
Well, right, but that doesn't... It says some key benefits of this technology include seamless version updating for globally distributed applications and greater control of memory allocation to the Java virtual machine. Unlike Java applets, WebStart apps do not run inside the browser. However, by default, they run in the same sandbox as applets with several minor extensions like allowing to load and save the file. Okay, so it's going ahead and doing that work. It's essentially using the browser to launch an application. Which is really the right way to do it, right? That's the most difficult thing about Java is getting the app itself to launch, because you either have to build an operating system specific launcher, for lack of a better term, for your cross platform Java application, or you have to tell people, okay, look, get to your OS's terminal, and then, you know, type this incantation to get the application to start. And then once it's started, it's, you know, you're good to go. So this bypasses that, right? This lets you do that start of the application from the web, from a browser, as opposed to from the command line. And so it gets rid of all that. So rewind this conversation back, you know, 10 minutes and use web start and you're golden.
There you go. All right. So, excuse me. This doesn't have any effect. And I know we said this at the beginning, but I'm reiterating it.
Yep.
This doesn't have any impact on the Java-based apps that we run on our computers directly outside of a web browser. So things like CrashPlan, older versions of Adobe apps that rely on Java for menu displays and stuff.
You're totally fine.
Yeah.
Because those already have that wrapper, right? The application lives inside of this wrapper that you know as CrashPlan, and you double click it and it opens and you're good to go. And from what I'm learning as we're doing the show, the Java Web Start thing is actually, I think it's an app that runs on your computer, right? That then will launch these things, and it's sort of kind of an application, a Java application manager, if for lack of a better term.
Okay. Yep. And I'm assuming that whatever apps are run through this little application manager system will be sandboxed in with that application manager.
Exactly.
All right. That seems better.
It's quite reasonable, and it's the right thing. The question is, you know, how portable is it really? I mean, we all know that Java is this uber portable language, and you can write once and it runs on many platforms, and that's great. But these things that were written to run inside the web browser, how much work does it take to get them to run inside of Java Web Start? And I don't know that answer.
Neither do I, especially since I didn't even know about this until we were already recording.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the real question. But again, I mean, I think the bigger implication, like you said, has nothing to do with Java. It's all these things that, because there are tons of things that still rely on Silverlight and Flash and all of that. And as much as we don't like Flash for web ads and all the annoying things that it does, there are still many things that require you to have Flash for them to run, and they run full applications inside your browser. That's where this is a problem, I think.
I agree.
Fair enough.
And I don't see a fix for the Flash side of things coming anytime soon. So there's just going to be a point where developers are throwing their hands up in the air as they're trying to sort out how to deal with the fact that these sites that they've developed just simply don't work.
Yeah. And, well, it's not just sites, it's applications, right? I mean, I'm thinking about my daughter just got one of these. She likes to make stickers for her. She has this printed calendar that she uses. And so she actually bought this sticker cutter, and it's really cool. It does what they call kiss cuts, right? Where you put a design into the thing and it like intelligently senses where the page is and then does these cuts that you've programmed and makes it so that you can peel stickers off of sticker paper, but they're your custom design things. The entire thing runs as a Flash app inside of her browser.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's Cricut, CRICUT for anybody that's interested. But that's a problem, because this is a full-blown application. There's, you know, I mean, it's not used by everyone, but there's a, you know, sizable population of people using it. What's going to happen to those people?
Right.
Yeah. Huh.
Well, if they make money from the product, they'll probably find a way to update it, to shift it over to something else.
You would think. If anybody uses one of these things and has problems getting it to run on the Mac, let me know. I've become an expert. So there you go.
There you go. Now you have your resource.
That's right.
Okay. I'm forcing us into our next topic, even though I'd be totally cool continuing to talk about Java. But I really want to make sure we hit this other topic today. And this is the news that the FCC is going to be voting on February 18th about a proposal that they just announced, which would open up the cable set-top box platforms so that other companies could get into there. And what that means is that instead of having to lease a cable box and cable cards from your from whoever's providing you with your television service, you'd be able to look to other companies to get those premium channels that you would otherwise need to get just through the cable box. So then that means that you could have services that do run through your cable box, or you could be paying for your premium channel subscriptions through your TiVo, through your smart television, through your iPad, if you wanted, or say an Apple TV.
So, but this, what you're saying is this essentially allows forces cable providers to offer the same open type of platform that is already being provided to customers by like Apple TV or Roku or any of these other things, right?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, that's a great way to sum it up.
And I know it's not quite right to call Apple TV an open platform, but, you know, we'll put an asterisk there.
Your emphasis in the setup, Jeff, is that we're talking premium channel subscriptions. What about basic cable subscriptions?
There's no reason why you wouldn't be able to do that either, because this is about opening it up so that that really anyone can sell you your channels.
Right.
But in many cases, you don't need a cable box for your non-premium channels.
Yeah, is this about selling you your channels or actually being able allowing you to access the channels from your cable subscriber?
This is about being able to pay for your channels through whoever you want.
Yeah, right now, if you subscribe via your cable box to HBO, Brian, you pay your cable company for that subscription to HBO.
Yeah, I realized that.
No, I know. I just wanted to make it clear for our listeners, right? And so this is talking about paying HBO for that subscription, but there's no reason it just has to be HBO. It could be ESPN. It could be anyone. Essentially, what it sounds like is they're making the cable lines, forcing them to be open, kind of like the phone lines were and are, but it was a much bigger deal like 15 years ago when, or even 20 years ago, when we went from you have to buy phone service from the person that provides you the actual wire to no, that person has to allow other people to resell on their wire. And
yeah, see, I don't think that's what it is, though. I think what this actually is allowing me to access, say, my Comcast cable subscription through a box made by anyone that wants to make a box that'll do that.
Okay, let me read you.
They're not proposing upturning the entire cable franchise system that has, you know, governed U.S. cable consumption.
Okay.
For decades. They're talking about just the set-top box that accesses the subscription that you're otherwise paying for.
All right. So I'm going to read you a quote from the FCC's statement. FCC Chairman Wheeler is circulating for a vote a notice of proposed rulemaking that would tear down anti-competitive barriers and pave the way for software, devices, and other innovative solutions to compete with the set-top boxes that a majority of consumers must lease today.
Yeah, so this is absolutely about allowing you to access your cable subscription through more than just the proprietary box provided by your cable provider. I don't think it opens up the service. I think it opens up.
We need to dig more because that's possible right now. You're doing it with your TiVo by way of a cable card.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what you would be able to do if this is approved is just pay TiVo directly for your HBO or ESPN subscription and not have a cable card.
Got it. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you keep emphasizing the premium content, and I don't really think that's the emphasis here either.
No, I'm just using that as an example.
But the basic cable stuff is also extremely important. And you would still have to pay Comcast for your service. You just wouldn't have to pay Comcast for the box to see that service on.
Right.
That's the competition that they're wanting to open up here.
They want you to be able to have a single box that gets you everything, and you aren't forced. I mean, that's what you know, that's what this says. It says programming, lifting up independent and minority content. When consumers are able to access all their content from MVPD programming to streaming video in a single place, they will better be able to find and enjoy the programming most relevant to them. When it's easier for content creators to reach consumers, we would expect this to lead to more and better programming accessed more easily, especially minority, independent, and international programming. So to me, what that means is you pick your box and you can get everything through it without being locked down by what they then also refer to as the cable card regime, right? So it's the TiVo is a great example. Right now, you need a cable card from your cable company for your TiVo to access your cable channels. Mm-hmm. What it sounds like they're proposing is that you don't need that cable card anymore. You can pay TiVo to get all of that stuff. If TiVo provides it to you, and TiVo wants to become a service provider, which a channel service provider, which they're not at the moment. They don't provide channels to you. They provide a different type of service.
Right.
It also sounds like it could mean that Apple could release a set-top box, which they have, mm-hmm. that has a coax input, which they don't currently have. And then Apple or someone in the App Store could sell you access to other channels over the coax, not just over streaming, right? This is a box that with the proposal, what I just read to you is over the air, and over the air is the wrong term, but over the coax programming as well as streaming video.
You have done a much better job of explaining what's in my head than I have done.
Yeah, MVPD is multi-channel video programming distributor. So it's the cable, the satellite, or the telephone company, right? That's the one pipe. And then you connect your internet to that, and you get what they refer to as streaming video. So, I mean, there's these two terms that they're using. Streaming video for over the internet, MVPD for over your cable or your satellite or whatever it is. This is talking about opening up the MVPD stuff.
So you can get the one box you want, whether it's your Apple TV or your Roku or your TiVo, whatever, and do everything through there and not have to pay your cable provider for a set-top box or for cable cards.
You don't have to pay. You'd have to pay someone, unless somebody wants to give it to you for free. But
which is not going to happen.
You would have to pay
for your content,
but not,
you don't have to lease a box from your cable provider to get it.
Yeah, and when we say cable provider, we actually mean that in the most literal sense, the person providing you the physical cable to your house. Because right now, that's the person you have to get your box from.
Right.
Or your cable card.
This wouldn't allow you to have a Time Warner subscription in a market where Time Warner wasn't competing.
Well, presumably not. Yeah. I mean, if Time Warner doesn't have the rights to sell you service, then you can't get service from Time Warner. But there would no longer be a physical restriction to Time Warner selling service on a line that Comcast provides to your house.
Yeah, I'm still not convinced that that's what they're doing here.
Sure sounds like it. It sounds like they're doing with the cable lines what they did with the phone lines 2 decades ago, or perhaps a little more.
Yeah, and cable companies are not happy about this.
Right. Well, and the phone companies weren't either. No, that's what it sounds like, Brian. I mean, they're talking about the Telecom Act of 1996, and that's, you know, that's it.
All right, well, we'll have to do some research.
Yes. There's definitely more research to be done. This is all brand new information that's been available. Well, it leaked yesterday and was officially released this morning and last night at some point. So there's still a lot of research to be done to figure out exactly what the ramifications of this proposal will be.
Yep. And I will read one last section of this, Jeff. It's okay. Quick. To ensure that a competitive marketplace as required by the Telecom Act of 1996, the proposal identifies three core information streams that must pass from MVPDs to the creators of competitive devices or apps: service discovery, entitlements, and content delivery. So I believe it is what we're saying here, Jeff.
I think so too.
Yeah.
But Brian, if it turns out you're right, then
sounds like another steak dinner.
Not going to put a steak dinner on this because I haven't read enough of the source material. I just think you're misinterpreting it. But we'll do some reading.
Yes, we will. Cool. All right. Well, we are out of time. So, Dave, thank you for being here today.
My pleasure. It's actually been fun to do a kind of a behind the curtain look, because most of the time we've written the article before we've done the show, and now you get to hear what happens behind the curtain. So it's good stuff.
Totally good stuff. Brian, thank you for being here.
Yep.
And feel free to call me out anytime that you think I'm wrong, and I'm more than happy to let you know that I'm right.
Okay, sure.
Observations at macobserver.com.
Yep. Let me know what you guys think. Are Dave and I right, or is Brian right? And observations at macobserver.com, TMO Daily on Twitter. And of course, you can leave comments in the show notes for today as well. So, hey, thank you for being here, guys. And listeners, thank you for being here too. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.